an interview with Donna Shalala on September 12th, 1988. We're talking in her office. I'm Laura Smale, doing the interview for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Archives Oral History Project. I think of this as possibly one of the merger interviews that I've done. I mean, this is sort of a crucial year. But I'd like to start. Would you like to start off with saying what anything about now, or conversely, when you started, the problems you expected, the ones you thought you could solve, the ones you thought would be difficult, and what you found in the 6 months? And
well, the job was described to me very differently than it turned out to be. Everyone knows the University of Wisconsin-Madison is basically a sound institution. Perception on the outside is that the university has slipped, not through its own doing, but through two decisive legislative decisions. One, the merger into a system, and the perception was that the system basically had drained away resources from Madison. And second, that the legislature and the university itself had basically, that there was a big gap between the legislature and the university. The university had forgotten its roots in Wisconsin in the process of becoming internationalized, a world-class science university. Its roots in Wisconsin were not as deep as it once was, even in science, where we had studied our own lakes and rivers for years and years. I didn't find any of that to be particularly true. It might have been true for the previous 10 years of the system, but in fact, while I think that Wisconsin has not been able to keep up in terms of salaries to be competitive with its real peer groups, which are the private institutions, I did not sense that the problem really was the system. I think that there have been a number of problems here that have not been attended to, in part because the leadership of the university was distracted by other kinds of issues and was really overwhelmed with holding the place together. First, I think the university allowed itself to get too large without getting a commitment from the state for additional staff people, and you could see it in a number of areas. The student body increased 10%, the faculty increased 5%. To make up that difference, we not only increased the number of TAs, but we simultaneously increased the number of academic staff who were on instructional lines. So we coped, but we coped in a way in which really stretched us almost too thin. Simultaneously, to be competitive, we had to lower teaching loads. And that is, the faculty probably teaches less than they did 10 years ago because we were competitive for first class faculty. So one of the things that happened was the university allowed its student enrollment to get too big and really out of control in many ways, where classes were closed off to students. In the process of letting that get out of line, particularly with undergraduates, we broke the faith with the people of Wisconsin. Our fundamental contract with them was to train undergraduates, that is, to take their young people and give them a first-class undergraduate education. They began to see the university as impersonal, while the other campuses were much more personalized, much smaller. They thought our commitment was only to research, because the leaders of the university constantly talked about the role of a great research university, and they thought we were ignoring undergraduates. They found us arrogant, and all of the worst things you could say about a university were really translated into the way we treated undergraduates. Mm-hmm. And that really created a level of alienation with the people of the state that became in part the basis of our problem with the state legislature. Because they no longer, while they took some pride in the fact that they had a world-class research university, they no longer identified. And the leadership of the university, which was barely holding the place together with the growth in research, could not step back and possibly see that. Outsiders have the advantage. And that is, we know how these town and gown relationships work. When I first came here, I ran around the legislature and just listened to people. They all told me the same thing. And then we did a poll. And the poll, in fact, reconfirmed what those legislators had said, and that is
the poll of legislators,
the poll of the people of the state.
Yeah.
In fact, when I announced our undergraduate strategy and our undergraduate initiatives, it was without poll results. But I got such a good response from everybody across the state, it was reflected in the poll. I mean, the poll actually said that we were right on the mark, that what the people in the state cared about was how the university treated undergraduates. But again, it was in part that we let that get under control. The second thing we didn't do was we didn't raise big money. Every other major university in this country, except Wisconsin, went out and raised $100 million, $200 million. We're probably 5 years behind our peer institutions. Mm-hmm. And there simply is no way this state is going to maintain a great research university without us. We're really state-assisted, not state-funded. And we're really 5 years behind the level of fundraising we should have been doing in Wisconsin. We're just about to start it, and it's going to start slowly because we've just hired a new head of the foundation. Third, in its attempt to maintain a faculty of the first rank, the university did not put in place modern management systems. And so we had the almost hilarious sight of a university of this rank going from an old-fashioned 19th century registration system right into the modern age. I mean, everybody else was going from online to touchtone. We were going from nothing to touchtone. And you can see it as you walk around the university, that there is no really senior-level administrative official. There's no hierarchy in the university. There's no senior personnel officer for the university. All of the things that large, complex organizations have in this country, whether they're universities or corporations, this university doesn't have because we didn't spend the money on those kinds of things. Even when we went into library modernization, it was 5 years after everybody else, and again, we were going to the most advanced system very fast. And it was in part because when we had resources, we poured them into faculty salaries, into equipment, into trying to maintain. We didn't pay attention to the physical plant. No one paid attention to spaces that undergraduates study in or learn in. One of the things that we've done this year is we're starting a systematic renovation of large lecture halls that are used by undergraduates. There's no constituency for that. So those three things were really great weaknesses. Finally, the university, which prides itself on faculty governance and on the strong role of faculty governance, essentially turned the university over to senior academic staff. That if you look at who really governs this university, it's not really the faculty. They control promotion and tenure, and the university committee diddles around the edges, but the major issues in this university, the major decisions, are made by academic staff people who are not part of a hierarchy. A middle-level group of very smart, very able people who are not supervised by a chancellor or vice chancellors because there's no hierarchy here to do that in. So that's sort of an outsider's view. I did not anticipate any of that as explanations for why Wisconsin was at the point where it is. All of those things are fixable. That is, bringing Wisconsin into the modern age, making it more sensitive to undergraduates. Most people would say to me at this point, why didn't you mention the race issue? Well, the race issue isn't a particular Wisconsin issue. The other things I've mentioned are peculiar to this university on why it got where it is, on how it fits into Wisconsin. The race issues on this campus are national issues, are issues that are occurring on every college campus. Ours took a particular configuration. Are we behind other major universities in terms of hiring? We may be behind them a little in terms of process. We're about where they are in terms of hiring. I inherited a race issue. It wasn't of my choosing. Of all the issues I would have expected to deal with when I came to Wisconsin, that was not one of them. We began to do some things, I think, that are useful. More importantly, we took the lead of universities around the country. Rather than just fixing our own, we played a leadership role. That happens to be my personal style. My tendency in crisis situations is to get out ahead of an issue, is to lead on the issue, because people are always nipping on your heels. and the difference between what we did and what Michigan has done. Michigan is still in the middle of an uproar. While we're not in the middle of an uproar, and while I'll predict that we'll still have problems, we at least put some things together and got moving here. I think, in general, people are pretty satisfied. It cost us a little money that no one wanted to spend. And
did you feel that that distracted people from what you really were after?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I was, frankly, personally furious that my own feeling was I had been basically set up on the issue, that it hadn't been dealt with before I came, and that commitments were made in terms of timelines that were almost impossible. To have to report on the race issue by February 1st, even for someone as skilled as I am in dealing with that particular issue, and as most people will tell you, there are few people in higher education that have had more experience on that issue than I have had, but I was just beside myself that I had to move that fast on that complex of an issue. It was high risk for the institution first and for me professionally to deal with that one head on. The fact that we did deal with it and got some progress was in part skill, but a lot of it's luck. Just luck.
Whose idea was it, the Madison Plan?
It was my idea once I read the Holly report. Oh. See, the students had come out with this report. The students had taken control of the committee. I read the report and said, first, they're going off in a direction that's really unacceptable to those of us in higher education. It's a separatist approach. Separate faculty, separate staff. I said, you guys can't be serious that we're going to do this kind of thing. And I said, second, it wasn't comprehensive enough. It would not change the behavior of the institution if we were going to do something on race. We shouldn't just buy off on that report, we should write our own report. So I started a series of consultations with faculty, staff, and community people and students about what we should do.
Okay, well, you don't need to say much more about that because it's been well documented. I'd just like to ask you this, the notion that Madison wasn't being a state university, that really happened when Extension was taken away from Madison, don't you think? I mean, it wasn't our fault, in effect.
Well, it wasn't, but, you know, the formal, there's always been outreach, but the real key to being a public institution is what you do with the young people that come from every part of the state to study in Madison.
Yes, I suppose that is...
See, the touch point, when you talk about the Wisconsin idea, you're talking about programmatically, in substance. When I talk about being a public institution, I talk about the real human touch point of the people of the state with this university. It's their kids. It's their dreams for their kids. When a legislature thinks about Madison, he thinks about the kids he knows in his community that come to Madison. He thinks about the complaints he gets from his parents, from their parents, about them not being able to get into courses. I mean, that's the touch point of a state. The human, living Wisconsin idea goes beyond simply using the research of the university. It's the role that a great university like Madison plays in educating the next generation of young people. No one will educate more of Wisconsin's leaders than Madison. And therefore, we've got to take our responsibility for those young people very seriously. Our first role, I don't care what we call ourselves, is to take care of those young people. Then we can talk about our special role in terms of research and everything else. But if we don't do that well, forget it. We've broken the connection between this university and the people of the state, and we'll have continuing problems.
Well, how did the legislators, how have they reacted to your...
They said Madison doesn't care, the faculty don't teach, Madison doesn't care about undergraduates. Kids can't get their degrees in 4 years.
Are they still saying that?
No. No, as a matter of fact, they've noticed that, number one, we got through registration without any big complaints, and number two, we gave this warm Wisconsin welcome to all these freshmen, got the whole community kind of to turn out and welcome the freshmen. It'll be even bigger next year, and people noticed. But the most important thing is we did something substantively. Kids got into classes. Why did they get into classes? Because deans and department chairs broke their backs to open up enough sections to help get going. So it wasn't just PR and fluff, it was more than that. But we sent out a message that we care, that we understand this is our primary responsibility. that it's not to be left to two-year campuses and to four-year colleges. The smartest kids in the state come here, and we've got to take real good care of them.
How did the system react to this?
They loved every moment of it. They thought it was terrific.
They're not jealous.
No. And I've been very collegial. The other thing is, we're not doing anything to encourage kids to transfer from the other four-year campuses. And we're cutting our enrollments. That all helps them. We don't, and we should not behave like we're competitive with anyone. We're not competitive with anyone in the state. We're the University of Wisconsin at Madison. I mean, we're not. There's no competition.
Going back to the getting Madison accepted in the state again, is fundraising part of this, or, I mean, hoping that you'll get more funds as a consequence of this?
Well, I think it helps. I think institutions that smell like winners raise money. And there's no question that alums will see themselves as supporting an institution that really fits well into the state. And after all, most of our money is going to come from alums that are still in the state, still live in the state. All of that will help. But more than anything else, it's seeing Madison as that premier institution that they remember it as, not as a place that's acting insecure where a lot of backbiting is going on. Mm-hmm. And that all helps. It's the smell of a winner. People like giving money to winners. That's who they give money to.
That's right. And Shane is said to have been always on the defensive for Madison.
Irv Shane, to be fair to Irv, Irv Shane had this institution during very difficult years, the transition within the system. I may be getting the best years.
It doesn't sound it to me from what I hear.
But it's time for us to be upbeat, to be positive, to be talking about getting momentum going again.
Let's talk about, you say you may be in the best years. From what I hear, this has been a very bad time for Regent micromanagement of the campus and system. And I'd like you to say what they wanted you to do when they talked to you when you took the job, and what you expected, how much cooperation you expected from them.
Well, they haven't turned me down yet on anything. Their sense was the university was out of control, that it was not well managed, and that it had terrible community relations. Mm-hmm. And they were embarrassed by the racial problems. That was about it.
Weinstein was saying this to you. And
they were all saying that. They were very consistent. They were consistent. They just thought there were no senior level managers, that no one knew what was going on, but more importantly, that the university didn't seem to be able to manage itself through a registration process or through anything else.
And that was true, you've said. Yeah.
It was true that the university was not organized to do those things. I think that Bernie Cohen really set us on the right course. I mean, he really managed our way through the registration process. They hired some very good people and got it going.
And you said when you came that you thought you'd have no trouble talking or working with Shaw.
And I haven't. It's been the easiest working relationship of my professional career. The one thing that people have to remember is the system doesn't have any ideas. Madison has ideas. The system doesn't assume that they have, you know, good ideas that we're supposed to do something about. We have to have a very clear idea, very clear vision of what we want and where we're going. First budget that Buzz is about to announce are basically Madison's priorities. We had a clear idea of what we needed and what we wanted and how to put it together. We went and sold it to the system. Madison gets itself in trouble when it sits as a peer at the table with the other institutions and then divides up the pie, as opposed to knowing what it wants, going in and telling the system what it wants, and for the system to build everybody else around Madison. We are the sun to revolve around.
Yes, but what I've heard is that the system and the regents keep attempting to level Madison, and that they wouldn't buy this notion of Madison saying what it wanted.
Well, depends on how slickly we do it. That's not going to be true of the next budget. It just won't be true. number one, I come from a system, so I know how to maneuver in a system. And number two, what we need to do is to identify those ways in which the system can help us and doesn't have to help everybody else at the same time. We've got to identify those things that they can give us that don't affect the other campuses.
So you think Shaw is essentially sympathetic with medicine?
Well, absolutely.
What about...
He wouldn't have hired someone like me if he wasn't.
What about...
Otherwise, they would have hired someone, you know, with less skill, less visible, less able to manipulate the media. I mean, if they really wanted to level Madison, they wouldn't have picked me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been interviewing deans and directors mm-hmm. this semester. They're all terribly upset at things the system has done, and they're one thing after another. The centers of excellence, the degree review, membership, the way the DIN committees are made up, the accountability they're demanding. What about those things?
Irrelevant. Basically, small amounts of money. The DIN committees meant nothing, and I told the deans they didn't mean anything. That the budget was basically going to be put together after we got finished figuring out how much catch-up A was going to pass. See, they take the small things more seriously because of the level that they're at. The issues are, what are the big issues? How much does Madison get in terms of its share of the pie? Are we going to get the kind of cooperation we need on our construction projects? And my argument is, if you look at the overall budget this year, as Buzz Shaw submits it, it basically will favor Madison. And that's what they ought to measure. The centers of excellence drove the deans nuts. That was done before I came. I would have just said no. I don't know why we ever did it. It doesn't fit with a research university. Or we should have screwed them up by really putting every great department on the list and knocked them all out of the box, showed them how foolish it was.
Was it too late after you came to
the Yeah. Department? Oh, yeah, it was already done. It was basically done. And you have to remember that there are a set of deans here at the university that were here before the system was established.
Yes.
Exactly. So the idea of manipulating the system to fit our interests, the idea that they have to now live forever with the system is not in their heads, it's in my head. Because I know darn well we're never going to get out of the system, so we have to make it work for us. But for people who lived before the system that was here, that were here when in a different era of Madison and a different era of higher education, they're never going to give up that thought. But in practical terms, which is what I care about, are we getting our fair share of the budget? Do the budget priorities reflect Madison's needs? We're going to do just fine.
Even the physical plant we really are getting, because that's been one of the complaints, that money's going to other people's gyms and students.
Well, I think that's right, and they're going to get their fair share of the amount. We were told this year that we probably shouldn't apply for any more new buildings because we've got two last year, and I said, that's unacceptable. We need biotechnology and chemistry, and we're probably going to get them.
Who did you say that to?
I said that to Buzz Shaw. I said, can't wait. Can't let science go down the drain.
And do the regents buy this?
Well, they're about to.
So you didn't, Weinstein wasn't anathema to you?
No, I mean, you know, I've spent my whole career dealing with people that are difficult. And, you know, I have a bit of the steamroller approach. We got our act together and we know what we want. We just make it very clear. My own sense of the regents is that they know darn well that the reputation of the university system depends a great deal on Madison. They can't afford to have Madison go down the drain. They have some overriding interests, but what we have to do is reduce the number of things they can pick at us about. They can no longer say to us, you don't pay attention to undergraduates. They can no longer make jokes about our registration system. And they're going to have to find a new set of things to jimmy us around on.
From what I gather, they will. I mean, that they put on Madison each week some huge report that has to be done.
Well, that's the bureaucracy in the system. This is a paper system. We're even working on that. I told Buzz that I wanted to reduce the amount of paper that we had to fill out. For instance, I told him that once we handed in an affirmative action report, we were not going to answer requests for additional data. He decided what the basic report is, and that was going to be it, that he couldn't have every committee request new information from us all the time. We would just say no.
Did he bought that, did he?
Yeah. He said, you're right.
Well, then, what about Trani? Apparently, he's the one, or people seem to think he's the one who's starting.
Well, he's been driving them nuts for a year. But I'm just not worried about that kind of thing. First of all, Madison has to learn how to say no. Just say no.
What about the extension, the whole extension business?
Well, the extension thing is very complicated, and I have to admit that while I've been briefed and have spent hours on it, it's a funny decision. It's a very complex decision that was made, and to basically take some of it out of Madison, and it's been a mess. I think that the fact that the faculty now is integrated makes it easier, but the fact is that the flexible money is over an extension, and we still will always have this bit of a tension in the relationship. Can we work at it? Yeah, but we're going to get a lot of ulcers in the process. But we also need to do our own outreach and our own extension and our own community contacts without using that former structure. And we'll be able to do that in the years to come. We just have to learn, again, how to beat the system. We need a set of people here whose attitude is to beat the system, to figure out some way around the system, to get things done. We need a positive, upbeat attitude. Not people that have been beaten down, but people that basically decide that they're going to go beat them at their own game. We're just going to do it better than they are. We'll outmaneuver them.
Where are you going to find them?
Lots of talented people around here. It's an attitude. Find some people that learn, that know how to wiggle.
Well, have you been able to instill this attitude in the deans?
Oh, I think that most of the deans that have been beaten down so much, it's going to be difficult until I demonstrate to them in the new budget that it really can be done. Mm-hmm. They're not going to believe anything until we deliver on the budget. I mean, they haven't seen any real money yet. Deans believe in real money and real resources. Until we raise some money and deliver on the budget, it's all rhetoric to them.
So you're very dependent on not only what budget goes in, but what comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's always the test of chancellors. You don't need chancellors for anything else except getting money for you. I mean, you basically, deans, particularly these powerful deans, just want us out of the way. Reduce the bureaucracy, stay out of our way, and send money.
Did you, how much have you gotten to know legislators?
I know most of the legislative leadership now, and I have breakfast about once a week with legislators.
Oh, good. Whom do you have breakfast with?
I saw Stan Grzynski the other day, and I saw Dave Travis. I mean, I saw Betty Jo Nelson. I mean, I'm seeing a large number of the legislators on a regular basis. Just checking in with them, telling them what we're up to. It's good.
I interviewed two once, and they felt that not enough attention at all was paid to legislators.
No, I think that's right. I think we don't. We have a new legislative lobbyist who's just starting to do some of those things. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a university that had so many town and gown problems. I think it's because we're so big. We're the whipping boys of the state. People just like beating us up because we're big and arrogant.
Mm-hmm. So you don't mean literally town and gown. You mean state and gown.
But even town and gown, in terms of our role in the community.
Such as?
Well, when I came into the university, I asked people for a list of the movers and shakers. I asked them for a list of the minority leaders. No one had any of those. There was no one in Bascom that could give me a list of all the business leaders in town. Or all the black leaders. They didn't think in constituency terms. I mean, they just couldn't put together those lists. They didn't have telephone numbers. They didn't have Rolodexes. I come from a world in which the networks are absolutely critical in terms of how universities survive. We survived on our reputation for too long. Now we have to put the infrastructure together.
Who did you get to do that?
Hired some new people, basically. And told the old people to start putting lists together. Mm-hmm. That it was important to the survival of the university that we put these things together.
But I gather the drought may affect the economy and that will turn affect the budget and...
No, I don't. The drought, farm income's going to be up because it's overall farm income, not just the drought. Revenues are going to be up in the state because there's some sorting out manufacturing, and we're going to be in the best shape this year than we've been in years in terms of revenues. Well, we can talk the governor into spending all that money. I don't know.
Have you been in touch with him very much?
I've had some contact with him. I've had good meetings with him.
He's essentially sympathetic, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's very supportive of the university. Much more upbeat than most people in the university are.
Does he have any regent appointments to make?
Yes, and he's just appointed Gustafson, from the Gustafson Clinic, to the Board of Regents. He's made two or three appointments.
Well, say what you think about the Board of Regents.
They're like every other public board I've met with. You know, they're uneven. They do micromanage, but they're not people of the stature that are used to being on corporate boards where you don't do that kind of thing. You put your faith in the chief executive officer. So that if you point people for whom their major board is this board and they haven't had a lot of board experience before, then they micromanage. I mean, they and even people that have corporate boards themselves may micromanage. They do things on public boards that they wouldn't do on private boards. I have a rule. I would never put anyone on a major public board who did not have extensive board experience, because then they know at what level they're supposed to operate. They're just sort of having fun.
You must have been told, I've gathered, that previous boards have been a good deal better.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and at a different level. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of it's the tone of the top leadership, the three or four people that lead the board.
Which is Schilling and Grover.
Yeah, they're too inexperienced. Mm-hmm. None of them have ever sat on a major board before, their whole careers. For Schilling and Weinstein in particular, this is the major event of their lives. To be on this board. You just don't do that. And then sometimes you luck out, you know, with someone that is improbable, that hasn't necessarily had that experience, but just is someone that is so powerful and so instinctive and knows that you put your faith in the chief executive officer.
Do we have anybody like that?
Ab Nicholas. Yeah, the four or five members of this board are really of that stature, but they're not dominant or secure enough to do that. You live with them. Do I find it complicated? Yeah, but it's part of the job. Do I let it get me down? No. If you want to deal with public higher education, you deal with boards like that.
Do you have them to your house?
Yes.
Do you have them socially?
Yeah, I do know a number of the board's members socially, and I, of course, see them at the regents' meeting. Mm-hmm. But I've had a number of them over.
That was kind of a sore point between Shane and O'Neill, was this who entertains the...
We've actually, Marianne Shaw and my staff people coordinate. We've had none of that.
Oh, good.
None at all. We just agreed ahead of time that we were going to be friends and just work it out. I don't much care. We have enough to do. I mean, if Buzz Shaw wants to do all the entertaining of the regions, it's fine with me. We basically said, you've got first shot. You tell us what you want to do, and then we'll build our schedule around it because we've got plenty to do.
Which of you, by the way, belongs to the AAU?
The Amateur Athletic Union or the American Association of University Professors?
No, the...
The AAC, American Association of Colleges and Universities?
Well, what's AAU is the...
The American Association of University. Yes. Buzz Shaw has the seat on that. And we have the seat on the Big Ten.
But that didn't worry. You know, that was also a very sore point.
No, because I don't need it to be a national leader in education. I have more access than Buzz does. I can get any of the leaders of the higher education organizations on the phone. I mean, I think it's important the university has that membership, but the system won't give it up. But it's not critical in terms of positioning the university in a leadership position. I mean, I'm a personal friend of the presidents or chancellors of our peer institutions, and I've known them for years. I knew them long before I came here. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that they gave me the position was because I was a national leader already in higher education. I mean, they got someone that was built into the national network. And you know, I don't need that title to make sure that Wisconsin stays as a player in the decision making. It's not absolutely necessary. I would like the university to have it, but the system won't give it up, so I'm not going to fight over it. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. I asked for it. They said no. It's over.
I'm covering everything I mean to. Do you know Pat Boyle, by the way?
Yeah. Complicated man. Very complicated. Very tricky. Protecting his interests, like everybody else does. Great turf fighter. Has to be watched. But, you know, we're Madison. We ought to be able to work through those things. No one's going to destroy our power or our role in higher education or our strong role in outreach. You know, it's a very tricky situation because it's messy in terms of authority. And sometimes when we don't agree, we're just going to have to go to the system and tell them to settle it. But sometimes, you know, it just takes time. Everybody told me we'd never be able to work out an agreement on this shared governance issue, and it looks now like we're going to be able to do it because we pushed and pushed and gave a little and they gave a little, and we'll work it out. But we're always going to have problems. You're always going to have problems when there aren't clear lines of authority. It doesn't have anything to do with Pat Boyle's personality. They could appoint my best friend over there. And we'd have a problem because the lines of authority, because the original legislation was not drafted carefully. So if you know that, then you just try to work with it.
How important do you think it is, the extension problem? I mean, it's generally described as a mess by everybody I talk to.
I think extension is important. How serious do I think the problem is? I'm sure that everybody sees it as very serious, but it's because there aren't clear lines of responsibility, it's always going to be messy. So it's not something we're going to straighten out tomorrow. We don't have the leverage, the clout, or the credibility to straighten it out. And the regents are not going to deal with it. If anything, they'll come down on the side of extension because they don't trust us on the issue. They see us as straight academics that just want to absorb the positions and not do extension. There's an anti-intellectualism about a campus like this doing extension. But will we be able to work around it and continue to play a strong role in extension? Yeah, because we've got thugs that keep beating in to the discussion.
Who are thugs?
Joe Corey and Leo Walsh. And, I mean, you know, they keep beating their way into the discussion.
Leo Walsh was just incensed at the way the Director of Cooperative Extension was appointed.
Yeah, out of consultation. It was a national search, and they came up with one of his people.
Well, I mean, they never talked to him, apparently.
Bad form.
Yeah.
Bad form.
So the budget planning process, I don't really quite understand that, but I've heard people say that it isn't good.
With the system? System
is within the colleges, and then now that the system is perverting it.
There's no planning process.
Well, then maybe that's what's bad about it.
What's bad about it is there's no process. Besides, there's nothing to fit into. There's nothing we can do internally to fit into that system, because what you're supposed to do is send representatives to meetings, as opposed to getting your own act together and going. I told everybody. Just not to cut their their hearts out over the system planning process, because in the end, the chancellors were going to sit around the table and cut the deal, which is exactly what we did.
And what did they say when you told them that?
They were disbelieving. I think they believe now. I told them exactly what was going to happen. I said, you guys are getting all uptight about these DIN committees, but in the end, let me tell you exactly how it's going to work. We're going to get in the room. I'm going to tell Buzz what we got to have.
How do the other chancellors take to this?
Oh, they think I'm collegial and supportive, because there are a whole bunch of things they want that Madison has blocked, like giving honorary degrees to people.
And you're supporting that, I think.
Yeah, I told them. It's okay with me.
Anything else?
No, just in general, I've been supportive and haven't acted arrogant. They understand the kinds of problems I have.
Aren't they making a push to get the right to do research on their campuses?
Well, they've gotten permission to do scholarly activity. It's not the right to do research. They have the right to do research. What they want is public money for research. Uh-huh. And, you know, we use private money. I'm not going to stand in the way of their faculty doing research. I'm not going to support the state giving them research money, because my view is that that's a welfare cushion. They ought to do what we do, and that is go out and compete for it.
Are you going to be able to prevent that?
They're not going to get research money. They know that. The system isn't going to give it to them. The regents, their problem is with the regents, not with me. The regents don't want to spend that kind of money. They don't want a whole bunch of research universities around the state.
They still don't. I got the impression that maybe they did.
Nah. They don't want to spend that kind of money. It's all they'd need.
You said, going back to the problems you raised, there's the one about the academic staff controlling things around campus. What are you going to do about that?
I think I'm going to put some hierarchy in place, bring in some faculty members into Bascom, and make sure we go through the university committee on major decisions, and make sure we use the academic staff executive committee so that there's some kind of policy-making process. It's not that I'm opposed to academic staff participating in decision-making, but the policy issues ought to be identified. It ought not to be a bunch of people making decisions on their own as opposed to doing some policy development.
Can you give an example?
I think admissions policy. We hadn't made any major changes in admissions policy in years, and it really required a policy development process with lots of consultations in terms of what we wanted. What we wanted was a better group of students. We just raised out-of-state admissions. We had to go and convince the admissions committee to do that. But centrally, we had to decide that was in our interest. We have a process in which we choose what capital projects we're going to do that is very much a bureaucratic process. It didn't have anything to do with the priorities or the central priorities of the institution. Had powerful bureaucratic interests playing off against each other. Parking. Maybe a faculty committee, but the day-to-day parking decisions about how we organize themselves. There was a myth around here that the city wouldn't let us build any more parking. That hadn't been true in 5 years. No one went and asked or told them that we were going to build some parking. I went and basically said to the city council, get ready, because we need to put some parking here.
Is that what's happening down on Lake Street?
No. We're going to put some ramps up. It's just starting as we have the money. Mm-hmm. We're really short of parking on campus.
Yes. The football team. How much does that affect all this Madison and the state?
A lot, apparently. I mean, it really does affect people's attitude about the university. It also has some economic impact. There are a certain number of businesses that really depend on our turnout for football games and things like that. But people feel upbeat. beat about universities. We have different constituencies, and one of them is a big sports constituency. We ought not to forget it. There are people that support us because we're a great educational institution, and there is a whole other group of people that don't have any direct connections necessarily or have indirect connections. And they support us because of our athletic teams. It brings pride and honor to the state.
So what are you going to do about it?
Well, I don't know. Doing my best to help the coach recruit and help to send, what I'm doing basically is making it clear that it's not, that the whole athletic program is not divorced from the university, that their future is our future. Be easy for us to disassociate ourselves from deficits and football teams, and but we're not going to do it.
Was this being done before?
Oh, I think so. I think there's a big gap between Bascom and a wide river.
You mean, the Boosters Club was raising all the money.
Right. And, mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to be so disjointed about this.
No, that's all right. You're not disjointed.
Again, on the state, the business community in the state, apparently the system has never cultivated it properly. Mm-hmm.
Either we.
Are you doing something about that?
Yeah, we are, with advisory committees and with new initiatives and with a new strategy for the business school, with some fundraising. We're trying to close the gap. We're also going to redo our business university relations over the next couple of years.
What do you mean?
That we're going to appoint a new head of the university, of the UIR, University Industrial Relations Group.
That's been rather
dormant.
Yes.
And we're going to revive it and energize it.
I was thinking more in terms of the engineering college and their help to industry.
Well, they basically have been the centerpiece mm-hmm. of university industrial relations. What we want to do is to broaden that so it's not just engineering.
This all takes quite a while then. You have to wait and appoint somebody and get the program going.
We're going to make an announcement in the next 3 weeks.
Oh, really? That sounds good. Well, my next major topic down within the campus is faculty governance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know what you thought of it, what you think of it now, what you think.
Well, I think it's very good at the important levels, at curriculum, at hiring, at firing, at tenure, promotion. I think the divisional committee structure is very important. I think they've done a terrific job on integrating extension faculty. I'd like them to do an even more sensitive job at the professional school level, where we have really faculty that do applied things, that we need to make sure that we're not undermining our professional schools by making sure that everybody is a basic scientist or whatever. But basically, the centerpieces of faculty governance are in pretty good shape here. I am concerned about some unevenness in terms of how departments use their resources in terms of maintaining their faculty and whether they really make an effort to keep people, whether they really have strategies when they get merit salary stuff, money, in terms of how they take care of people. Sometimes they take care of the older distinguished faculty and the younger faculty and forget about the middle, and we're losing people in the middle, and we need a real strategy in the middle. I have to worry about whether they see the big picture. And part of my responsibility is to pull the faculty governance structure up periodically and make sure they see the big picture of what's happening to the university. I don't think they're strong enough in terms of the university committee on issues.
Well, I'd like you to talk about the university committee.
My experience so far with the university committee is that it doesn't have strong views. And I'd like it to have stronger views, but I think it's working its way into a comfortable relationship with me. I'm used to having very strong faculty organizations. And people have just been tiptoeing around me. I'm used to people talking back to me, pushing a little more than they do around here. They're too polite, too civilized.
Is it, have you had a meeting with the new management this year? I mean, the new head? And
yeah. Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be, and they've got some priorities, and it'll be useful. And some of it, it's done through the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs anyhow. A lot of what University Committee does is really academic affairs stuff. So
but
the Vice Chancellor. I do meet with them for as long as they want, mm-hmm. and then I usually pop out mm-hmm. and leave them to Bernie Cohen.
I think there's been a good deal of disappointment in the way the University Committee is being chosen, and that it's not getting strong.
But you know, that's the faculty's problem. You want to keep an aggressive chancellor in check, you get a terrific university committee. I mean, the way to keep me in check is to put me on a leash. The only way to do that is with a strong faculty governance system.
Do you have any sense that anybody's going to do this?
Oh, yes, because I'm going to hire a whole bunch of people that are going to do that.
Well, you just said that you, I mean, they'll be administrators then.
No, they're going to be academic administrators, though. I'm going to hire a whole bunch of faculty members.
Put a leash on you.
No, basically, to bounce off.
This is your three assistant vice chancellors.
No. This is, we're going to have a new dean of the graduate school, a new dean of LNS, and a new vice chancellor for academic affairs.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire top echelon of the university is retiring, mm-hmm. and we're going to go back through and hire a new crew of people. I mean, that's the way to contain me, with a strong university committee and with a whole bunch of new leaders.
Bated breath waiting for that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Somebody said that the regents and the system were going to want to have a say in the choice.
Nah, we'll get who we want.
Are they going to, do they have any?
They can put a representative on the committees, but it's unlikely.
Are you going to leave the structures in place?
Yes.
LNS?
Yes. Yes. I don't have any reason to change them. Too much trouble to change structures. I'm not big into structural change.
Taking sections out, you mean setting up new colleges?
No, fine arts would like to go off on its own. I think it always has. But I'd let the new LNS dean think about that. It's not the kind of thing I would ordinarily do, and I want to wait for the Futures Committee to report, Fannie Lemoine to report.
Mm-hmm. What is that going to be effective at all, the Futures Committee?
I hope so. I'm going to take it very seriously. The clearer the direction they give the university, the more likely we're going to take them seriously. The clearer their voices.
Do you meet with them?
I do, regularly.
And make suggestions or just...
They just bounce ideas off me to make sure they're not going off. But basically, I think that they're very focused and they have a good sense of what they're doing.
Is it really kind of another university committee?
No, it's a... Because the university committee has to deal with real issues. They're supposed to have a vision for us for the future. Mm. It's what the university committee doesn't have time to do.
But if they were more powerful people, and well, I realize they don't have any, they don't have anything to do with the faculty senate. And so.
Not really, but it's a pretty representative group, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it sounds very good.
Yeah.
Are you satisfied with? Or are you, the Madison plan and the hiring, there's been some complaint that's interfering with faculty governance.
Faculty's doing the hiring. We haven't interfered at all with faculty governance. All we did was offer positions. Anyone that trotted in was someone they wanted to hire.
Where did you get the money from to pay the department?
We got new positions from the state. So we simply we set them aside. We got it from the state. I haven't talked to a department about hiring a minority. No department has asked to talk to me. It was all done through the deans, and through the department chairs. I mean, basically they were told that we wanted to, first of all, we've got an affirmative action plan for their regular hiring. But for tenured full professors, the positions were available if they could find people. That's no interference with faculty governance. There hasn't been any interference on minority hiring and faculty governance. Faculty hires people. I never heard of a dean hiring someone, let alone a chancellor hiring someone. I haven't offered a job to anyone, white or black.
But there would be a powerful, wouldn't there be push from administration, for instance, when tenure comes up?
No, we never get involved. I can't think of an administration in this university or any university in this country that would dare to get involved in the tenure process like that, or not, and particularly not a school like Wisconsin. I've never had a conversation with a department chair in my entire career about tenure for an individual faculty member.
Yes, but what if you lose all these minority hires?
Because it's the faculty's fault. They're supposed to be hiring people that can get tenure. It's their problem, not mine. The law school just hired 4 tenured faculty. It was their job to get them through divisionals, which they did. It's not my business. They want to hire people they can't get tenured, they get the dirty black eye, not me. I mean, the faculty does the hiring, the faculty does the promotion, and the faculty does the tenure.
Yes, but the policy comes from here.
The policy is that we'll make resources available. Mm-hmm. We didn't say lower standards. We said you find people that you think are qualified for your departments. And if you can do that, we'll give you additional resources. We set no different standards for tenure, no different standards for promotion, and no different standards for hiring. We just made resources available. No, what it does is it takes care of the issue of credibility. The departments don't trust the deans on offering them additional positions for minority hires. And we've offered additional positions only for tenured minority hires, because it's not the kind of thing that would normally be available from a dean. Most departments hire at the junior level. What we said was we need some senior level people around here and some leaders. So if you want to find some senior level people who are acceptable to your department, who you're prepared to give tenure to through your divisional structure, we will give you the positions. So we gave them the positions only for tenured people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a big protection. That means they have to find someone that's tenurable. Mm-hmm. We didn't tell them who to hire. We didn't have anything to do with the decision making. All we did was write the check. They came to us after they had made the decision, said, got the person. The law school had already made the decision about the 4 people they wanted before they came to see me for the positions. They had gone through their whole process, never talked to the chancellor's office, till they needed the money. It's called incentives. Mm-hmm. But we use it for a variety of other things. We've used it all along. It's what's used in higher education all the time. But boy, I won't let the chancellor's office get near the hiring process or the promotion process or the tenure process, in part because all those things are appealable to us. The faculty has unfounded